Yeah, I'm letting Adam hear this song. It's his favorite song, dude. Oh, of course geez. I'm letting him hear it. 903. Welcome back to the program. We're into hour number four. It's Big Show in the Morning, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We will got lots to do this hour, so let's dive in. He's Matt. I'm Will. And joining us right now, friend of the program, friend of ours, friend of yours, he is Adam Stanley, covers all things golf, and he joins us right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Stanley, good morning. How are you, pal?
Good morning, and I'm doing much better since you let that music play.
Told you.
I'm vibey now. I'm in this mood. I'm ready to go. It was my. How did you know that was my favorite tune? I don't know.
I could just read the mind. Yeah, read the mind through the phone and thousands of kilometers away. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna let Adam just sit on this song and sip on his coffee and have a great time. How the heck are you, man? What's going on?
I mean, I'm a little, like, my heart's, like, crumbling into a couple of pieces here, because I'm pretty sure out there about your final day on Friday. But, yeah, everything's great.
You're so emotional, your phone was cutting out. So it's okay. You know, it's too bad. It's really too bad. But yeah, it's final time you and I will chat on the air. I know it will not be our final conversation off the air, but certainly on the air, our final conversation. So thanks for jumping on and giving us some time today. And I know that you,
no worries.
You observed from afar. I'm just curious your takeaways from some of your colleagues. And even, I know you had a couple of pieces that you retweeted on your Twitter feed, but any takeaways for you from the fine event? Matt took in his first ever live golf event. He was at the Shot Charity Classic on Saturday, and Matt, you loved every minute of it. He got to see John Daly's Hooter Pants up close. That's what his highlight was.
Oh, yeah, he was on 16 and a nice little sand shot about 3 inches from the cup. Great video of it. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
These are important things to draw people back to live golfing events for sure. But yeah, no, it was as per usual. I didn't realize it was the 10th anniversary of the Shaw Charity Classic until another friend of the program, Wes Gilbertson, had tweeted something about that. I know he's kind of been there and had tweeted or has covered that event for, I think, since its inception. So, I mean, that event obviously does a lot for the Calgary area as it relates to just charity stuff. I mean, it's got charity right in the name, but I know they've raised a ton of money, and you see somebody like, you know, Fred Couples or whomever it may be, any of these legends of the game, they can't say enough good things about the tournament. And then you talk about the winner in Jerry Kelly, and you talk about deserving champions. I mean, that guy has been on an absolute heater over the last couple of weeks, certainly on the Champions Tour. I think it was his third win in 6 starts or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you think about guys who are out there still continuing to play golf at a high level, and obviously golf is a unique sport in that regard, but, you know, Jerry Kelly goes out there, plays steady, wins in a playoff, wins for the third time in 6 tournaments. You know, you just have to tip your cowboy hat to him, I guess. And you look at the other guys who are in the mix. I think Patrick Harrington was in the mix. Certainly after the first round, he was in the lead there. So just a nice little tournament to watch. And obviously another good year for the people of Calgary, who obviously get to be a bit of the benefactors of all the charity and all the dollars that are raised out there.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because we were following Patrick Harrington because he was one of the guys that my dad knew. And as you mentioned, he was the leader going into Saturday. So we followed him for a few holes. And Fred Couples was actually in the same trio as John Daly. And I don't think I saw a bigger crowd following any threesome while we were there on Saturday, moving day. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, kind of on the John Daly point, I mean, people can kind of feel whatever way they want to about how he's, you know, handled himself over the last 3 decades or whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, this guy has won 2 major championships, and he's probably, outside of Tiger Woods, the biggest brand in golf over the last 3 decades. Like, people know who John Daly is, and for better or for worse, they still want to see him do the thing that he has been famous or infamous for over the last little while. And you know, it's hard to kind of knock that when he has been so famous and so beloved no matter where it is that he goes.
I saw him light up a cigarette and I was like, this is so cool.
I know, he's very much the anti-athlete, which I think
one of us, one of us, one of us. Everyone chants that with John Daly. And it's funny, we had him on the show last week. John Daly was able to catch up with him for about 10 minutes on the show, which, of course, our text line loved. And our listeners were like, that was awesome to get John Daly on the show. But it sounds like, and again, not to go too in-depth, and this will be the final one on Daly, but it sounds like John Daly Jr. is a pretty good golfer in his own right.
Little John is not so little, but yeah, I think he's on a golf scholarship. He doesn't just go to Arkansas. He plays golf at Arkansas. I think later, at the end of the year last year, you would have seen him. And then I think at the end of this year, again, he'll be back at that same father-son event that Tiger Woods and his kid plays in. So John and little John will be in that. And yeah, I mean, he's got a nice action. He's got good hands as well, just like his dad, John Daly, does. And I mean, yeah, okay, fine. His last name's Daly, but you're not going to earn your way onto an NCAA D1 golf team if you suck. And clearly he doesn't. So it's going to be fascinating to see kind of the next phase of his life, his golfing life. But yeah, he's very good. And it's going to be pretty fascinating to see what happens with him.
And of course, the new college rules, you can have the NIL deals. And the Golf Digest writing an article earlier this year saying, Little John Daly signing an NIL deal with Hooters makes the most sense of anything ever. So Little John he's following in the footsteps in every way possible. Let's shift gears, talk some PGA Tour. Adam, pretty cool because six Canadians starting the FedEx Cup playoffs in the field, which is a pretty awesome number.
Yeah, it's great to see that because we often over the last couple of years and certainly this summer, you know, you talk about this momentum and this wave behind the Canadian guys who are on the PGA Tour, and then you get to a week like this and you realize that, yeah, the proof's in the pudding. Like six Canadians who make it to the FedEx Cup playoffs is a record. It's the most number of Canadians to start the FedEx Cup playoffs since the FedEx Cup playoffs themselves actually started in 2007. So, you know, there was a number of years with just two guys. There was one year where just one guy made it. A couple years ago, we had five. And then, yeah, this year with Taylor Pendrith coming out as a rookie and having such a great season and a great run over the last little while, you know, he's made it six. So six guys. I mean, Brooke Henderson stays in her own category. She's doing her own thing and kind of leading the charge for the game. This country ranks fifth in the world. But to see this number of Canadians, such a robust handful of guys, literally make it to the promised land, make it to the best on best part of the PGA Tour season is pretty cool. And Taylor, he's off to another great start. I think I saw just before you called me, the guy's 4 under par through nine holes and tied for the lead early, which is awesome.
Yeah, he's fallen one stroke back. For people on podcast, obviously this is tape, but Mark Leishman has taken a lead of 5 under through 10, and Pendrith is 4 under through 9, and you love to see it. And it's funny, because the last two times you've joined us, I think you and I have chatted about Pendrith. He was coming off the injury, and then he had that really good showing at the tournament that Tony Finau won. I think it was the 3M just a few weeks back, and now you've actually got a great piece that just dropped today on Pendrith and kind of highlighting the man and the year that it's been for him.
Yeah, I know. It was nice to catch up with him, you know, a little bit after kind of the quote disappointment, I guess, of not winning that 3M tournament. Because like you said, he was in the final group on Saturday. He was in the final group on Sunday, but Tony Finau was just not going to lose that tournament. Tony Finau went on and won it by five. But Taylor told me he learned, you know, he learned a ton. He learned about winning. He learned about what it was going to take to win, what it was like to be in the mix with the top 10 golfer in the world. So, you know, that was kind of great news. And he told me, you know, it's been a dream comeback since he has returned from that injury. So, you know, for the folks that maybe don't remember, he fractured his rib right after the Players Championship. He was supposed to return at the John Deere Classic. His parents drove from Toronto to Illinois to watch him. They get a call Thursday morning. Hey, mom. Hey, dad. I tested positive for COVID-19 and I have to withdraw. So they got back in the car, turned back around, drove back to Toronto, and Taylor's return was pressed on hold for a week. But, you know, it kind of worked out for him. He had that last little time to just sit and relax and wait for the return to happen. And ever since then, he's been on an absolute heater. And now not only does he have a chance to, he's obviously already earned his PGA Tour card back for next year, but he's 68th on the FedEx Cup right now in the top 70 make it to next week in the top 30, make it to the Tour Championship after that. So he's got big eyes on some big prizes over the next couple of weeks, for sure.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Not only is he kind of right there in that cutoff, is at number 60, as you mentioned, but he, Adam Hadwin, Mackenzie Hughes, and of course Corey Connors, all four in a great position to play maybe 2-3 times here on the FedEx Cup playoffs. And I think that's probably the best we've seen in terms of a Canadian showing at these playoffs in quite some time, if ever.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The Tour Championship itself has never had, during the FedEx Cup era, more than one Canadian. It's either been one or zero. So the fact that we now have, let's say, four guys with a very, very legitimate shot at making it to the Tour Championship is kind of just another building block of what we had talked about a couple minutes ago on the number of Canadians just making it to the FedEx Cup playoffs to begin with. If you're going to be one of the top 30 guys on the PGA Tour, that means you're body of work, for lack of a better description, for the entire season has been the best of the best. And anytime we can kind of celebrate those Canadian successes is always awesome. And, you know, obviously Corey has played better. Corey Connors has played better than anyone else from a Canadian male golfer standpoint, probably over the last 2 or 3 years. But, you know, there's a couple other guys nipping at his heels, obviously. And with the President's Cup happening this year as well, I mean, Corey's basically a lock to join the team, but both Mackenzie Hughes and Adam Hadwin are in the mix for captain's picks for sure. And I don't know. I mean, if Taylor wins this tournament or has back-to-back top threes or something like that, I mean, all of a sudden he may be in the mix for that conversation too, which is pretty neat. So yeah, no more than one Canadian has ever played the Tour Championship in this FedEx Cup era, but we definitely have a pretty good opportunity for that streak to be broken this year.
Golf analyst Adam Stanley, our guest on Big Show in the Morning here on Sportsnet 960. Matt?
So let's talk about what we saw earlier this week as far as the court proceedings that we saw between the PGA Tour and former PGA players. Not the LIV Tour, but the former PGA players themselves suing the PGA Tour. They wanted to still be able to play in the major tournaments. Can you give us maybe a little bit more background on what happened earlier this week and how it ended up shaking out with these three players who wanted to be in the playoffs this weekend not being allowed?
Oh my gosh, so much lawyer talk. There has been a lot of texting with lawyer friends to be like, wait, what does this mean? But essentially, it's like the whole have your cake and eat it too scenario that kind of unfolded. So I think your point is probably the best one. This isn't the LIV Golf Tour itself is not suing or not locked in an antitrust lawsuit with the PGA Tour. It's now 10 golfers. One of them, Carlos Ortiz, actually withdrew his name from the lawsuit. So there are 10 golfers led by Phil Mickelson who have not resigned their PGA Tour membership, who are trying to play LIV golf events and PGA Tour events. And it had to get this temporary restraining order was part of the lawsuit. It was seen in a California court earlier this week because three of the guys, Hudson Swafford, Matt Jones, and Taylor Gooch, wanted to also play the FedEx Cup. They wanted to play in these playoff events. They had earned their way in, but the judge ruled against them. So that's a win for the PGA Tour for sure. The PGA Tour and their brass has got to feel pretty good about that, because basically the judge said, you know, you haven't received irreparable harm from the PGA Tour by not playing the FedEx Cup playoffs. Basically, your new contract with the LIV Golf Invitational Series is so big and so robust that it's basically covering off any of your, quote, losses that you would have felt from not participating in the FedEx Cup playoffs. So if the PGA Tour can kind of lean into that, and if the PGA Tour's lawyers can kind of say, hey, listen, this is your new contract with LIV is basically covering off any of the financial harm that you may be feeling by not playing the PGA Tour as well, then yeah, you can't do both. You're going to pick this one and you're going to get paid and that's all going to be fine, but don't come crying to us when you still want to make the major championship field and et cetera, et cetera. So the TRO, the temporary restraining order, the judge ruled against that. So those three guys are out. And the lawsuit itself, the antitrust lawsuit, anti-competition lawsuit, will continue. And I think the next big phase of it won't be heard until next August, from what I've been reading. Another long runway for that.
Now, one of the things that also slipped out from this was that the signing bonuses that the LIV Tour is paying out, it's essentially a big money advance until the players have won back that amount playing in the tournaments. What did you make of that development?
It's a great question because the LIV golf, the golfers themselves, excuse me, they have basically said, yeah, no, that's not the case. And the LIV golf tour has since come out, I think maybe it was yesterday evening, saying the same, that no, the players get paid and then their signing bonus is separate. But that was a very different statement when the lawyers, when the folks who represented the LIV Golf Tour were under oath and came out and had to say what they were saying. So what do I make of it? I think that that's going to be some pretty muddy waters moving forward. I mean, obviously you have lawyers who are representing that rival circuit under oath saying something, and then the tour and the golfers themselves obviously not under oath saying something totally different. So something to take a look at, something to certainly wonder about as we move forward. And I would kind of put that in the same category of the guys are choosing to play live to play less golf. It's not really seeming to be that way. I mean, Patrick Reed, for example, and a bunch of the other guys are teeing it up on the Asia Tour this week to try to earn some world ranking points. So, you know, Asia is a lot farther away than Memphis, Tennessee. So that argument isn't really holding water. And it seems like there's some leaks in the argument about the income and the signing bonus as well.
Now, the other thing here that's kind of the latest development, Cam Smith deciding that he was going to go to live. I just saw a video of Scottie Scheffler walking across his putting line. I don't know if it was in a pre-tournament round or something along those lines, but obviously the world number one, not very happy with world number two. A thought on Cam Smith leaving the tour?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for the tour if that ends up happening because, of course, excuse me, Cam Smith won the Players' Championship earlier this year, which is the tour's crown jewel. He's the Open Championship winner, and he's number two in the world. So that is, and he's 28 years old. It's a big, big get for LIV if they can secure somebody of that nature, of that stature. Are they trying to build out teams based on regions of the world? I think that's kind of where they're going. A team Australia, a team Asia, a couple of European teams and a couple of American teams and trying to drive interest that way. It does seem like they're trending in that direction. And who really knows what the Australian impact is going to be. It does seem like obviously Greg Norman is leading that circuit. It does seem like they're going to have a couple of tournaments in Australia, which the PGA Tour hasn't gone there basically at all. And some of the Australian golfers maybe feel like they've been left out. So this could be an opportunity for golf fans down there to see some of the best golfers in the world. Cam Smith is a big name. Cam Smith is, you know, a top three golfer in the world. Cam Smith is in his prime right now, and it's going to be pretty awkward at PGA Tour headquarters if Cam Smith ends up winning the FedEx Cup and then bounces, and then they're going to have to build some marketing materials around, you know, a guy who doesn't play for them anymore. But is he going to move? Is he, as a singular entity, move the needle enough for people to care about this? I'm not quite sure, because I do think that the PGA Tour and the guys who are loyal to that, the collection of those guys is much, much stronger.
Wrap things up with Adam Stanley. Appreciate the time as always. You were out in your own backyard because later this month, the Women's Open is coming to Ottawa, and you got a little sneak peek, Adam, this week.
Yeah, the CP Women's Open coming back here. Guys, it's going to be crazy. Like, it's going to be really, really nuts. You know, obviously, one of the nuggets that I got was that Brooke Henderson wins the Evian Championship, wins a major there. Tickets have been trending, kind of doing a nice little slow climb. Week after week from prior to the Evian to afterwards, they sold three times as many tickets in just that week as they had in the couple of weeks prior. So Brooke's moving the needle. The Brooke factor is going to be absolutely insane. And kind of the cool thing is that they've brought some of the build out stuff from the RBC Canadian Open to the CP Women's Open for this year, including the rink, which is going to be awesome.
Awesome.
Kind of on TV, and the LPGA Tour really lets the tournaments themselves do a lot more than the PGA Tour. You know, quickly, Hilton is one of the sponsors of Golf Canada, and they built like a little one-bedroom hotel room at the Canadian Open that people could win and sleep there and then watch the tournament the next day. But it was, you know, in someone's backyard off the golf course. Here at the CP Women's Open, it's actually going to be on the tee of like the 12th hole or something like that. So the person who sleeps overnight at this one-bedroom hotel room, that they've built can basically open up their room and kind of stand there in their bathrobe and watch someone tee off, which will be kind of neat as well.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool. And then obviously Brooke has had a great year, another top 10 finish at a major, this one at an event she's never finished that high, which was really cool to see. But I wanted to end here because we'll have lots of time to talk about Brooke before the CP Women's Open. But I think it was a couple of days ago or maybe yesterday, Danielle Kang is coming back. And, of course, she was diagnosed with a tumor in her spine earlier this year. But it sounds like, Adam, she's going to make the trip north of the border.
Yeah, the cool thing about the CP Women's Open is that if you take the five major championships away in terms of total purse, and you take the tour championship away in terms of total purse, the CP Women's Open is like the highest or the second highest in terms of purse for a quote regular LPGA tour event that the girls play for all season long. So it's an important tournament with a lot of money on the line. So Danielle Kang, you know, top 10 golfer in the world, if she's going to identify a quote regular event to come back to, the CP Women's Open makes a ton of sense. So, you know, that's just another kind of great addition to the field list. From what I understand, both Korda sisters, including Nelly, are going to be there. There were some questions about if Nelly Korda was going to be able to tee it up, just because she as well is recovering from some major surgery at the beginning of the year. And they weren't quite sure how much golf she wanted to play at the end of the year. But from what I understand, she'll be there too. So as it stands right now, I think we're at 48 of the top 50 in the world are going to be there, including all of the top 10. So yeah, it's going to be a nice week.
That's awesome. That is outstanding. A great field, and I'm sure we'll have Adam back on before the tournament begins August 25th in Ottawa at the CP Women's Open, which of course will be a huge weekend for Brooke Henderson and Canadian golf fans, as the builds look pretty sweet. You can check out the latest on Adam's Twitter at Adam_Stanley. And the fact they're bringing the rink to the women's side, I think, is a really, really cool and fun idea. Adam, great stuff as always, man. It's been a pleasure. I know that, as I say, you and I will certainly continue our conversations off the air, but on the air, it's been a lot of fun, man. You've given us so much time over the last couple of years, and of course, during COVID, doing a ton of video chats. Been good to get to know you, and certainly, as I say, we'll be having conversations down the road. But thank you, sir, and all the best to you and your family, and your growing family, I should say.
Thanks very much, and congrats on everything moving forward, and can't thank you enough for all the time over the last couple of years, and you've been the best, man. Take care of yourself, and we'll chat again soon. Thanks, man.
Right back at you. Adam, take care of yourself. Thanks for jumping on today.
No worries. Thanks, man.
There he is, Adam Stanley, all things golf. Again, he is a must-follow if you're a golf fan, at Adam_Stanley, especially from a Canadian standpoint, as he keeps you up to date on everything with Canadians on both the men and women's side. He's Matt. I'm Will. We'll take a break. Come back. Speaking of Canadian sports, CFL Week 10 begins tonight. Stampeders and Lions go Saturday. We'll tee up that game of the week for you around the corner. Hour 4 of the Big Show rolls on next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Putting a little bit of a bow on the Big Show in the morning here on your Thursday. Matty Rose along with you. Hour 4. Get us on your favorite podcatcher, Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, you name it. We're there. If you miss a moment, go back and grab it. We've had some outstanding interviews today. Talked to Tommy Wheeldon Jr. about the state of Cavalry FC and Adam Stanley, as we were just discussing all things golf. Man, there's a lot of talk about when it comes to the dramatics around the golf world right now with the playoffs and the ladies and, of course, the LIV Tour. But right now we're talking a little bit of CFL because on Saturday, oh boy, what a doozy it's going to be at McMahon Stadium. The Calgary Stampeders hosting the BC Lions, and we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk to Matt Baker, the manager of communications and content for the BC Lions, also a host of the First and Now podcast. Matt, thanks for taking some time today. Saw you were on with our sister station in Vancouver a little bit earlier this week, so we really appreciate it at Sportsnet.
Oh, hey, guys. Yeah, how are you? My pleasure. Let's continue the tour. I love it. Always love talking football.
There you go. Well, let's do it. Let's dive right on in. And there's so much to talk about when it comes to the BC Lions, but a lot of the conversation is centered around the quarterback, Nathan Rourke, the young Canadian. I feel like you've been asked probably every question there is about Nathan Rourke, so I'll keep it simple. What has maybe impressed you the most through 9 games of his CFL career?
Well, it's hard to pick just one thing. I mean, I mean, I think the stats and everything he's done numbers-wise kind of speak for themselves. But when you really peel it back and look at it, you know, he's on pace to shatter a lot of these records. Doug Flutie in 1991 has been the benchmark, right? But, you know, other than those accolades, I think it's just his demeanor and his commitment to getting better and not being satisfied yet. I mean, trace it back, 3 weeks ago, the team had to gut one out here against Hamilton, kind of a defensive battle. It seemed like the Tiger Cats had every opportunity in the world to steal that game in the fourth quarter, and thankfully the defense held it down. And Nathan was his own biggest critic on the podium afterwards, right? Just his commitment to the craft. I mean, it sounds like a cliche thing, but pretty much the first one in here, last one to leave. He's a football junkie. He's always watching film. He's always looking for ways to get better. And you look at the way they kind of dismantled Edmonton there on Saturday, but you know, Sunday morning, he's in here looking at what can I improve on? What can we do better? So I think it's just the fact that he's not satisfied yet. And he's all business is what he is. I mean, but lucky to kind of track his progress since the team drafted him in 2020. He had a whole year off. Well, not a year off, but a year away from games. But he was still in here most days. And just kind of the way he kind of took the opportunity and ran with it. But yeah, this is overall focus and the way he conducts himself.
Is he the bona fide leader of the team? Because I think of Bo Levi Mitchell, and when he came to the Stampeders, he wasn't because there was other guys ahead of him. But at this point, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who is not the bona fide leader, the face of the franchise in Bo Levi Mitchell. So how far has he come as far as that type of progression?
I'd say very much so. I mean, for a 24-year-old kid, that's impressive. And he, as you guys know, he had the luxury of learning from Mike Riley for a year. And you guys know Mike Riley is one of those quarterbacks who, for all of his accomplishments on the field and what he was able to do, that's a guy who had a presence in the dressing room. You know, he walks in and he has the commanding presence. So you're probably hearing the SkyTrain in the background, a little ambient sound there. But I'd say as a result of learning under Mike Riley for a year, he's also picked up that leadership tools. And most of this guy's teammates would say, yeah, he's wise beyond his years. And quarterback has to be a leader. And that's another impressive trait.
Now, he did have three games where I don't think struggle is the right word, but he had six interceptions over a three-game stretch, but also threw for eight touchdowns in those three games. But in that time, what might have changed? Was it as simple as the opponents, or were there other factors at hand that saw Rourke run through a little bit of a lull by his lofty standards that we've seen this year?
I think it's a credit to the schemes and the coaches that were scheming against him. I mean, you look at that Ottawa game where it was kind of the first one where he kind of faced some real adversity. You know, Mike Benavides is one of the better defensive coaches in this league, and that's a team that has some personnel. I mean, their record might not be what they want, but and then, of course, Winnipeg, we all know they're the real measuring stick right now. So, and although I think the offense kind of responded not too badly against Winnipeg, but ultimately it was defense and special teams that let them down. But I think it was just, yeah, you have to respect the opponents, right? I mean, those guys get paid to play and do a job too. So thankfully, a couple of those games, they were able to battle it out. I mentioned the Hamilton example there earlier. So yeah, I think it's just a matter of going up against some good teams and some good coaching.
Yeah, and then the games against Elks certainly help, boost those numbers for sure, but the performances have been great. I think a part of it as well is the receiving group is certainly not lacking, especially now that Brian Burnham is back and healthy. You add him in with Whitehead and with Katoy and with Dominic Rhymes there as well. Like, that's a deep group of receivers.
Yeah, and you know what I think I've learned more than anything this year? I mean, there was a lot of talk last year about games not being as exciting, scoring being down, offense being down. I think that was a product of coming out of the pandemic. I mean, last year, team meetings for the most part were conducted virtually. Training camp especially is a time where you establish relationships and get to know your new teammates. Some of these guys that came in, Keon Hatcher, the example you mentioned, had never been in a CFL environment before. You know, I think a lot of those guys struggled. because of all the restrictions and kind of readjusting to the football life. And now that they've had a full year to be practicing and watching film and actually doing more in-person activities together, I think that's had a trickle down on offenses all across the league, not just here. But yeah, I mean, as a quarterback, you're in a lot of ways, you're really only as good sometimes as the personnel around you. And it's a credit to Rick Campbell, Neil McAvoy, and the staff for allowing themselves to surround Nathan with the talent that he needs to be successful.
Also wanted to ask, and you bring up a great point, because with the Stampeders last season, there came a point where they were allowed to resume in-person team meetings, and the players and the coaches really credited that with the team's turnaround, which saw them much more successful in the back end of the season, getting to the playoffs, and we all know that it didn't go well there, but that felt like a bit of an outlier. The point being, getting guys in the room and having that accountability proved to be very beneficial for the Stamps, and I feel like it's done the same for the offensive line in BC.
Yeah, the offensive line, if I were to pick one position group that's been vastly improved, that's it. And that's another example of what I was just talking about. Last year they dealt with some injuries. You know, Riker Matthews was the big free agent piece, the final piece in 2020 ahead of the season that never was. And, you know, he basically lasts one quarter in the opener in Saskatchewan, and he's out for the year. And then Kent Perkins slides in, and he parlays that into a nominee for most outstanding lineman. So, yeah, offensive line play obviously is critical to all that. And, yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Calgary example. Remember, we came there in week two last year, and that was probably the most out of sync I'd seen Calgary in a long time. I think it was like a 15-12 win for the Lions, and there were no touchdowns scored for Calgary. And I think we later found out that Bo Levi Mitchell was dealing with his leg injury. So that's interesting. I mean, and Calgary kind of got better as the season went on. So, yeah, we had Kelly Bates on our First and Now podcast this week, and he just talked about the accountability with all those guys in the offensive line room. And they know they have a pretty important asset to protect. So there's maybe some more motivation. But, yeah, that's been a breath of fresh air to see the offensive line play vastly improved for sure.
We're talking BC Lions and Calgary Stampeders with Matt Baker here on the Big Show in the morning. And let's flip to the defense. What have you felt is kind of the identity of the defense? Because they're probably getting overlooked a lot with so much of the conversation being around Nathan Rourke.
Aggressive, tenacious, a much better job of getting to the quarterback. I know some eyebrows were raised in free agency at maybe the dollar amount that was paid to a guy like Matthew Betts, but the bottom line, whether it's football, hockey, whatever, you have to pay to get the assets you want in free agency. And, you know, Betts and Obum Gwachim have kind of been a nice little duo there coming off the edge. I'm biased, but I would put the secondary up against any in Canadian football. I mean, you see what Lucchese Purifoy has been able to do. Delvin Bro, maybe a bit of a slow start with the injuries and a couple of untimely penalties, but I mean, that chemistry will come, and then you have the most outstanding Canadian, Bo Lacumbo, go down with injury, and a guy like Ben Haladic is able to step in, a good Canadian draft pick. So you're starting to see the fruits of the labor, so to speak. You know, the CFL draft is very important, as you know, Canadian content, and just playing more aggressively and having the depth to back it up. Not a lot of teams can overcome injuries like that. And I think, as you guys know, the Calgary Stampeders have been kind of the poster child for that next man up. I mean, a guy like Trey Roberson is out for a long time. And then you'll see other pieces back there like Titus Wall, a rookie candidate, and Brandon Dozer, who we know a little bit from his time here. So it's cliche again, but, you know, having the pieces able to step in has been a big identity for that defense.
Well, and let's kind of compare the secondaries. You look at the Stampeders, and you mentioned the Roberson injury. All of a sudden, it's a pretty young and CFL inexperienced secondary between, you know, Ruffin, Titus Wall in his first year, Brad Muhammad in his second year after being with Ottawa last year. You got Moxie as a veteran, Dozers as a veteran. Tremaine Washington would fit into that group as well, although not with the Stampeders, so a little bit different. And then you look at the secondary for BC, and it is veterans across the board. Really, everybody except for the safety, Quincy Mauger, has spent several years in pro football. So how's that group been?
Yeah, it's outstanding. And you mentioned Moje, the safety. That's another guy that was, every year there's an example of this, you know, guys that are just names. But then you look at their backgrounds. I mean, Quincy played at Georgia, was part of a team that, you know, upset LSU, Jarvis Landry, and Odell Beckham at the time. And those are the type of guys, you give them a chance, they can really show what they can do. And, yeah, every year it's always intriguing to see what one or two guys are going to emerge from this and be starters. Moje has been that guy and really a big glue to that group. And he'll give me a hard time if I don't mention him. Brian Phillips, defensive coordinator. I mean, that's a guy who's not too far removed from playing the game himself. And I think that is a big factor on how close that group becomes. And you see it, there's fun, there's dancing, and there's having a good time, which is okay when you're winning and creating turnovers. But Ryan Phillips' stamp is firmly planted on the defense, especially the defensive backs, which is a position group he coaches as well.
Isn't it funny when you kind of look at these guys in some of their NCAA careers? Like you mentioned Moje, who faced off against Odell and Landry when they were in the NCAA, and we had a situation earlier with Mike Rose, the defensive lineman for the Stampeders, and he was being asked about Trey Ford, and he was giving answers and all the type of stuff. He was playing along, but he also got to the point where he's like, guys, I played against Lamar Jackson in the NCAA. Like, I'm not going to be blown away by Trey Ford. No offense or anything like that, but like, come on. And it's just funny because a lot of the Canadian fans don't necessarily follow these guys when they're in the NCAA, so you don't necessarily think about it in the same sense.
Yeah, and I'm a casual follower of college football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I find, you know, between CFL, NFL, try to get out to some high school games here. I find Saturdays is kind of sometimes my quote-unquote break. You know, my wife says I have to have a break from watching football on one of the days of the week. So, but I, you know, bowl season when you're on holidays and you're watching, and yeah. So, and then I try to do as much research I can on these guys, you know, all through the off season when the scouts are out doing their work and they say, hey, just a heads up, we're going to sign this guy. You know, you start doing background and it's like, yeah, and you said it best. I mean, I know there's a lot of naysayers that, you know, might be down on the product and might not think it's a first rate league, but I mean, there's only so many spots available in the NFL, right? So, you know, when you look at it that way, like these guys who played in the SEC or the Big Ten, that's something I try to hammer as much as I can. Like, yeah, these are world-class athletes. These are guys who were big star recruits out of high school. So, it's really fun to see these guys come up here and adapt and learn a whole new brand of football and really show what they can do on the bigger field.
How have things looked injury-wise? Maybe some worry in Sean White missing a couple of days of practice?
I'd expect Sean to be back today.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the kicking game will be a status quo. And, other than that, I mean, knock on wood, it appears that they've come out relatively unscathed here. I know James Butler, starting running back, has missed some time this week. I mean, today's kind of the day, right? I mean,
yeah.
We'll see what happens when they hit the field here in a couple of hours, but certainly don't want to jinx anything. But health-wise, it's a credit to the training and medical staff keeping these guys upright. And, you know, we're getting to that point of the season, though, where, you know, everyone's playing banged up to some extent. So it's just a matter of how much you can withstand it. But, Sean Whitey is expected to be out here today. And we'll see what happens as far as a couple of those other question marks from earlier in the week.
Yeah, and especially when you kind of look at BC, had what, the week two bye right after Rourke kind of lit the world on fire. The Stamps have already had two bye weeks. Like, there's been some strange stuff on the schedule this year, but yeah, status quo, honestly. I also wanted to ask, we kind of mentioned Sean White. Special teams, been good for the BC Lions?
That's probably an area where they would admit they need to improve. Was kind of their undoing in the only loss of the year, the kick coverage. They allow an opening kickoff touchdown, and that goes on the other side too, the kick coverage and the return game. Like, you guys probably saw Shai Ross was brought in from Edmonton, had a couple of decent outings, but we're still waiting for them to bust out a long one here, whether it's Shai or whether it's Lucky getting another turn back there. Lucas Purifoy has been used, so I would say the kick coverage and the return game would kind of be, I don't want to call it a weakness because you can't really say there's many weaknesses on a team that's 6-1, but I'd say that's an area where they'd be looking to get better at here each and every week.
Well, this game is going to be played in Calgary, the next one of the season series as well, but the third one will be back in BC, and we obviously saw the huge crowd that was there for that opening game with the big concert and everything that went into that, but how have things kind of continued on as far as, you know, the BC Lions brand and bringing in some fans to that big stadium, that beautiful indoor stadium that Dave Dickinson loves playing at late in the season?
Yes, well, of course, Dave loves because he's had success in there, whether it's been with us or Calgary. It's funny how that works. But, yeah, I mean, externally, there's a lot of buzz. I mean, you go downtown, it's a credit to Amar Doman, the club's new owner. You know, he's invested a lot more money in the community. The team has kind of been more present out at, like, beach events, beach parties, the art gallery. That's the downtown epicenter, right? You have to have a presence downtown. I know our fan base kind of stretches out to various areas here in the Lower Mainland and the Fraser Valley, but you have to stay downtown, have a presence there. It was going to be a drop-off after that week one crowd, right? I mean, opening night concert, One Republic, that's not going to happen every week. So I think they're happy with kind of the way the attendance has gone, but expecting hopefully a bit of a bigger bump in the fall when the games get more important. You mentioned, I like the extended divisional play. I like the fact that we're going to see Calgary, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, and Winnipeg three times each, all of them. I think that'll help, and that'll be a big boost to the Western Division playoff race. But, you know, it's tough here in the summer, right? I mean, first time in a couple of years, people have the luxury of going away, going to the lake, going to the cabin, whatever. And, you know, it's a competitive market from an entertainment dollar perspective too, guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, cost of living here, we all know what it is. And, you know, summertime and people want to go check out some concerts or some festivals. You know, that's not easy to compete with. It's not just the other sports we're competing with. It's,
yeah,
it's the competition for those entertainment dollars. But I will say this, the fans that are showing up, it's been good. They're more engaged. Mm-hmm. It's a more younger, diverse, vibrant crowd. And if it's only 16, 17,000, you want to have them engaged. So I will say is it feels fun inside there. That's what winning the games in those type of fashion will do. But obviously hoping for a bit of a bump once the post-Labor Day craziness kicks in.
Yeah, and it always does. We know that for sure. Matt, really enjoyed the time today, man. Enjoy the game on Saturday, and perhaps we'll see you up in the press box.
Anytime, guys. I'll probably be down on field level most of the game, but we'll try and come up and say hi. And, yeah, always love coming to Calgary. It's always fun.
Awesome. Love it, Matt. Take care, man.
Take care.
There you go. That's Matt Baker from the First to Know podcast, and also does a ton of the communications work for the BC Lions, and really enjoyed the chat and a lot of the insight on Nathan Rourke and the rest of this BC Lions team. Saturday, 5:00, Biz Nasty's going to be here. He's going to be racing the cow. They're going to be honoring Geo Hopkins for his 1,000th worked game in the CFL at halftime. You can still grab $19 tickets. They got the beer gardens and the live music before starting at, I want to say, 3:00 until 5:00. So it's going to be a ton of fun. The other thing that we were doing in the Stampeders report is we were talking about the team earlier today and really all week is pumping the tires on Titus Wall. The outstanding rookie for the Stampeders has been a great surprise so far, even to himself. I had a chance to talk to him on Wednesday. We're here with Titus Wall, Sam linebacker for the Stampeders. First-year Stampeders, Wall. We'll get to that in just a moment. But I want to start here, man. Get to know you a little bit. How did you get into the game of football?
So really, before football, I used to want to be a cowboy. I want to be a bull rider.
Bull riding also pretty big in Texas, though. Like, how did you kind of flip the switch?
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you, I guess, because I didn't really get a chance to pursue bull riding like that like I did football. So, of course, football was just there for me naturally. And so ever since, I just stuck with it, and I loved it ever since.
Did you know about the Stampede before you signed in Calgary?
I didn't, and when I found out about the Stampede and, you know, the rodeo up here, I was very excited for it, and so I had to make sure I went to it. I had a good time when I went to it.
Yeah, what part of the rodeo did you go to? Early on, or were you late in the kind of Stampede?
I think I was, like, more on the early on side. I can't quite remember exactly where I was, but I want to say the earlier side.
Any comparisons to running around there out in the defense and chasing down bulls?
Yeah, that sport is a lot more, you know, violent, a lot more brutal. And so I'm glad I chose the sport I did because them bulls pack a lot of punch to them. So
Tell me about playing the Sam linebacker up here in Canada, because obviously it's a position that really doesn't exist in the American game.
Right, like just going back to the American game, I would kind of compare it to the nickel, you know, position. And so just being able to transition to that, it wasn't that hard of a switch because, of course, yeah, I play safety. And a lot of my responsibilities now include me playing, you know, safety or I'll be in the box. And come out of high school, I did play linebacker, so that was very natural for me to go back into that element. And so just the transition overall was smooth for me, and I'm enjoying it a lot.
Obviously a lot of success so far. You scored a couple of touchdowns, interceptions. You had the fumble on the forced fumble on Dane Evans that went for six. Did you envision this type of success when you came up here?
Yes, I always manifest greatness for myself. You know, that's one thing I'm big on. I like to speak positive words of affirmation, just all that type of stuff. Just whatever it may be, I like to – I'm always manifesting stuff. I write in my journal what I'm going to do, my goals, what I'm accomplishing. I do all that stuff and make it happen.
Tell me about some of your teammates in the secondary. Pretty good group you guys seem to have.
Oh, yeah, I love all them boys back there, man. We all got something to bring to the table. You know, everybody's versatile back there. Everybody just ready to make a play. And so we all make each other better. We always, you know, want to be great. That's one thing we preach on every day is just being great. And so that energy is very contagious. And we have that in DB room, you're going to have a lot of production.
Big opportunity here against BC. Tell me about how you're setting yourself up for this game.
You know, just really preparation. That's the biggest thing. Just, you know, knowing what we're going to get, what to look for, what we're going to do, and just really fitting in our scheme, you know, just making sure we don't have any mental errors, no critical errors, and just making sure we're assignment sound and playing with great effort and intensity.
Last one for you, man. Jameer Thurman's already beating the drum for Rookie of the Year. You hearing all that noise, or how are you thinking about it?
You know, I hear it, but, of course, I'm blocking it out. I'm not letting it get to me at all. Like I said yesterday, at the end of the day, the job's not done, so I'm going to keep working until the job's finished. But up until then, I'm coming to work every day.
Love the mentality, man.
Yes,
good luck.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
There you go. 23-year-old Titus Wall, a rookie up here in the CFL, but having himself a great year. Stamps will practice today. We'll get their final injury report, depth charts Friday morning, and Saturday, 5 o'clock, they will welcome the BC Lions to McMahon Stadium. Coming up next on Sportsnet 960, it'll be Blair and Barker, all things Blue Jays. Their game yesterday was rained out, rescheduled for Monday. They'll play a doubleheader on Monday with a 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock start, so it'll be four games set in Toronto, as it was going to be a 3. Jays Plus with Blake Murphy goes at 1 o'clock. Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon and Sandra Priscina at 3, and they'll take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. So enjoy it, friends. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.